Hello, everyone, and welcome. My name is Jean Gallagher, and welcome to Discover Rising Tides, how the outside makes the inside better, where we explore the importance of the outdoors in maintaining life balance. And through this series, we'll be talking with women business owners to understand their journey. And today, as always, we start with our Healthy Living, Happy Life segment with Denise Stegall. Hey, Denise.
Hey, how are you, Jean?
I'm excited for today. There's some high energy happening here.
We got some energy. We're talking about success.
Yes. Denise is an international best-selling author of Healthy Living, Happy Life, a practical path to finding a healthy lifestyle that works for you, and curator of Healthy Living List. And this month's topic is healthy living, happy life from 3,000 feet, and how planning and organizing leads to a fulfilling life. And today, how success happens with the three P's.
Yay!
And then our second segment will be our main guest, Diane McClay. And I'm really excited for that too. And Diane and Denise are friends, and that's how we all connected. So we'll get to that. But let's start with you, Denise. Lynn, tell us about the three P's.
Okay, so we've been talking about planning from the 3,000 foot area. So kind of looking down from up there, like you're on a plane looking down, you know, you can see things much more clearly when you're looking from above. You know, we get stuck in our minutiae of every day. And so, you know, when we all want to be successful, right? And so we all read a lot of books. We listen to a lot of podcasts. We listen to a lot of gurus, follow podcasts, whatever it may be. But what happens is we kind of get a little bombarded by great information. Everybody has good information, great information. The challenge, I think, where we really start, we start listening to all of these gurus, you know, you and me and Diane included. but most of the challenge is before we start listening, we kind of need to know what success means to us. What is the path? Like how do we want to be successful? And of course, being successful means something different to you than it does to me. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to planning, we kind of have to go, okay, what is it that we actually want? In the big picture, that's what we're looking big picture, because then we can kind of we can get down to the nitty gritty a little bit more. So again, what is it that we want to succeed in? And you can do this, you know, overall, this is what I want in my life. This is what I want in my business. This is what I want for the next year. Mm-hmm. So it can be something that you work on the three P's. We'll talk about that a little bit more in a second. You can use the 3Bs, the 3P concept for all the different areas in your life. But I think what's important is we need to start with, again, core values. What are those things that are important to you? Why do you want this particular success? Why do you want to achieve these particular goals? And at that point, that's when we can say, okay, we need a plan. So the three P's, of course, we talked about this last time, are planning, prioritizing, and preparing. Now, what tends to happen when clients come to me, they've read all of these books and, you know, have all these bits and pieces of ideas. They've attended events, you name it. So they've got bits and pieces of a plan. You know, a little bit from, you know, Dr. J and a little one, more information from this particular book. And so they have this compilation of ideas and it's overwhelming because they liked this piece of one program, another part of a different one. And so they kind of look at all of this going, okay, this is my overarching goal or plan that I want to succeed in, but I'm going to try to do different. I'm going to try to plan in three different ways, mm-hmm. which doesn't obviously make sense. And so for me, when I started to get my life back on track, because I had, you know, was dealing with a health issue a handful of years ago, my success plan started simply with eat real food, make good decisions, and be accountable, which we've talked about. And for me, that was what optimized my overall well-being, you know, gave me the energy that I was looking for. And really to find that healthy lifestyle that works for me, which is really in my life what I was looking for and what I help people to do. That said, there were also times even within that that I realized I didn't exactly have a laid out plan. And so that's where I came up with the three P's. What's that first part that I needed? I needed to know, well, what was the plan? You know, what was my goal? And the goal is part of the plan. And obviously then there are these steps. And most of us are not very good at planning. You know, we have a calendar. I have three of them. You know, I have one upstairs that my husband and I share. I have my Google calendar. I have one on my, you know, my desk just to quickly flip through. So we're not really great at planning. And then what happens is when we face an obstacle or things don't quite work in that pseudo plan, we give up. Mm-hmm. So I know it's always said, you know, a goal without a plan is just a dream. So this is really where we want to sit down and access our inner guru, mm-hmm. and come to and sit down with a plan. What is it that we want? How do we want to achieve it? What resonates? So I ask you, Jean, if you have, what is the next thing you want to succeed in?
That's in that question right there is so important, and it's so hard for people to answer. Right. And going back to what y'all get, I'll answer your question. I'm not avoiding much, but going back to what you had said before, if people are going out and getting all this information from all these different sources, and there's just information overload and it's overwhelming, it's easy to go, I have no idea. This seems like such a great idea in the beginning, but I don't remember because I've already listened to four other things. And that goal setting piece becomes really difficult. And I think you have to bring it back to simple, easy to understand bits and pieces, like what you just said. I needed to get to a healthy lifestyle. So let's start on a small thing and work towards it. Mm-hmm. And for me, setting goals is hard, but satisfying once you do it. Because yes. Now all of a sudden you have a focus, mm-hmm. and it's okay to have goals in different areas of your life. So I have podcast goals. I have personal goals. I have professional goals, and I have relationship goals. But having them siloed, even though it's all me, having them siloed helps a little bit but they also each touch each other.
Yes. And so two things that I think are really important, especially when it comes to that, to creating those goals. Mm-hmm. I love the SMART-er goal. I love making SMART goals because they're you can write them down and they're right in front of you, that you can keep them right in front of you. That's one of the first things I tell people. Let's look at what that first goal is. Like for me, I want to lose 5 pounds. What is that? That's my goal, because it's measurable. You know, it's pretty simple. You know, mm-hmm. I want to lose 5 pounds by August 9th, whatever. Mm-hmm. So SMARTer goals really helps you to start that plan. To me, that's really the beginning of the plan. Mm-hmm. When you talk about, you know, siloing things, something that I really love to do with my clients is the life wheel. Mm-hmm. And you've seen it. Mm-hmm. Called all sorts of different things. It's where that pie chart of where it says, you know, you have different aspects of your life, you know, your health, your sleep, your relationships. I love using one of those. And I actually recommend to my clients that they do it every quarter, because this is how you can keep, you know, the silos, everything in a different section, but at the same time, because they all connect. I mean, your professional goals and your personal goals connect. Your personal goals and your relationship goals connect. Mm-hmm. And so by keeping an eye on that, the life wheel, and I change, depending on the client, we change the categories. Mm-hmm. And so that's a great way to, one, plan, but it's also a great way to prioritize.
Oh, I like that too. And people can understand that it ebbs and flows. It's really a moving thing. So it can change quarter to quarter. And what's interesting in what you're saying is when I talk to people for financial goals, you know, goals for me, when I'm talking to them about goals, I tell them the goals need to have three things. They have to have identifier. It has to have a name. It has to have a dollar amount assigned to it. And it has to have a time frame. So when you're saying, I want to lose 5 pounds in however long, you've just done the same thing with a non-financial goal, is you've given it a name, a purpose. You've said what your time frame is, and you said what you wanted to achieve during that time frame. So it makes it very simple. It's not just something that's out in the ether. It is this thing that's going to do this thing by this time frame.
Exactly. And too often when people start to create a plan, it's the, I want to lose 5 pounds. And then that's where it stays. Mm-hmm. So the, you know, kind of using the concept of the SMART goal gives you those other pieces that you need.
And then that gives you a chance to prepare. So now here's your goal. Now, what are you going to do to achieve that in the prepare part?
Right. Often in the prioritizing piece, before we get to the preparation, it really is, okay, so I want to lose 5 pounds by August 9th. That priority. So maybe you actually want to lose 10 pounds, kind of sitting in that, you know, 10 pound, 5 pound, whatever it might be. So say I'm going to change my goal to, I want to lose 10 pounds. Mm-hmm. That prioritizes before you get to 10 pounds, you've got to get to that first five, right? So I think that's a little bit where we need to prioritize. You know, we can't have this grandiose, I need to lose 100 pounds by next month.
Mm-hmm. Break it into smaller sections that are mentally and physically attainable.
Right. So there's a little bit more of that prioritizing piece, but yes, now how do you prepare for that? Mm-hmm. You have to make sure that one of the most important things is to get your family and friends on board. If you live with other people, you're trying to lose weight and you're going to say, I'm going to go vegan for a month. That's a little extreme, but let's just say that. And you do all the cooking. You might want to tell your spouse or partner that you're planning on doing this because it's going to affect them. Mm-hmm. So part of that preparation really is about preparing other people too. Mm-hmm. And it works with your work career goals too. If you have a goal that you want to reach in your job with your career and you work with other people, it's really important for them to know, because if you're busy doing something and you're not as available to people, they might get frustrated because you're not available to them the way you used to be. So again, preparation is really important to think of outside of you. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the most important thing is to then actually prepare yourself personally. Get the food that you want, get the recipes, plan meal planning times. So all of that comes into the preparation. And again, like I said, it works with your personal and professional and physical goals too.
One of the challenges of preparation, though, is that it can be a procrastinator because, well, I don't have everything in place, so this isn't going to work. So now we're in overcoming that perfection of preparation.
I was going to say, now we come into a fourth P, perfectionism.
Yeah. We're on the same page, right? Exactly. Well, I can't do this because I don't have it all. I don't have all the recipes. I don't have all the food. And that just creates a downward spiral.
It can. And so what I always tell my clients, especially when it comes to diet and exercise, is get one day right, get one meal right. Mm-hmm. Let's start small. Mm-hmm. Because what will happen, especially with that perfectionism, if you don't have everything in place, everything's not perfect, then you go, oh, well, I screwed up, so I'm not going to reach this goal. Mm-hmm. You've got lots of time to reach a goal. You know, between now and August 9th, if I screw up today with you know, my goal of losing 5 pounds, I can definitely pick up tomorrow where I left off.
It's about giving yourself grace.
Part also.
Yeah. Giving yourself grace, mm-hmm. but not using it as a crutch to not try again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Anytime we don't succeed in something, we automatically think that we're not good enough. We can't do this. And it really is a mindset. It's that internal judge that we have. You know, I always think it's the little angel on the one side and the little devil on the other. The little devil is a lot louder than the little angel. And so another time we'll talk about the little angel and the devil in more detail, and how that can help us, obviously, with success, with our health and our wellness, and our exercise goals and food goals.
I look forward to that. Thank you, Denise.
You're welcome.
As always, it's informative, but also achievable.
Thank you.
Hello, everyone. This is Jean Gallagher, Discover Rising Tides, and I want to just take a moment to talk about my friend, Denise Tagal. I am honored to call her as a friend, and I'm so grateful that she gives us her insight during our shows, each show, and talks about healthy living, eating real food. You hear Denise say, eat real food a lot. Well, she means it, and she knows what she's talking about. She is an amazing healthy living coach, curator at Living Healthy List. And if you ever have any questions about what is real food? Why does it matter? How does that apply to me? How do I change? What do I need to do? How do I even create a healthy living shopping list? Make sure that you call her. She is your healthy living coach. And you can find her at healthylivinglist.com. Hello, everyone, and welcome. I'm Jean Gallagher, founder of Discover Rising Tides, and I want to welcome our guest today, Dr. Laura Katina. And Dr. Laura is a founder and president of Armor Hand Gloves. She graduated from Ohio State College of Veterinary Medicine and is a small animal veterinarian. She developed the Armor Hand Animal Handling Gloves after a life-threatening injury she endured while working through emergency medicine. The Armor Hand is a compassionate glove designed to allow for proper and safe restraint technique without the use of force. The glove is used to safely handle animals, reduce injuries to humans, and improve animal welfare and the advance of and cause of wildlife and pets. Armor Hand is reusable, vegan glove ensuring a low impact on the environment, and the glove decreases disease transmission, supporting the One Health Initiative, as well as increasing pet owner compliance for at-home medical care and recommendations. She's worked with the Paw Project to pass a ban on declaw surgery in the city of Pittsburgh, and she has an interest in spirituality, self-care, fitness, human, and pet nutrition. So, Laura, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
Oh, I'm so excited to talk to you. I really loved our intro conversation and want to dive into the glove, but let's start in the beginning. So tell us your path through becoming a veterinarian, and how did all that start, and where did the glove come into play?
Sure. Thank you. So basically, I'd always been interested in medicine, always had a love for animals. So I felt like a veterinarian was the perfect career, you know, choice for me. Went to Ohio State, and it was not even a year after I had graduated from vet school. I was working emergency medicine, and I was bit by a cat on my left-hand thumb. And so frequently in practice, we do sustain injury, and we kind of just wash our hand and get right back to work. And so that's what I did. But after my shift, I did go to the hospital and they had me soak my hand. I was discharged on oral antibiotics. And it wasn't until the next morning that I knew how serious the bite was. My left hand was about 3 times the size of my right hand. And the infection had spread from my thumb all the way up the left side of my neck. And so it was, I knew it was not the typical, you know, injury that I'd gotten so many times on the job, and went back to the hospital that morning. I had to have emergency surgery that day. I was in the hospital for over a week. And then I was on IV antibiotics for months, and physical therapy in order to regain the use of my hand. So it was a really threat. It was a life-threatening injury. I wasn't responding to the antibiotics. And it just really opened my eyes to how we need safety tools, you know, in practice, and to have the right safety tools in order for them to be safe for us, safe for our patient, compassionate, think tools that we can use and still do an exam and exam, you know, everything we need to get done. So that's, that injury was kind of the whole start for Armor Hand Glove. Yeah.
So what was going through your mind at the time? So the difference between, oh, this is what happened. So because you weren't actually handling the cat when it bit you, were you?
I wasn't. So that's a really interesting point, is that I was done with my exam and mm-hmm. the cat was on the exam table. And what I did at that time, we had all paper notes. I picked up the file and my pen and I was starting to write. And that's when the cat kind of, in that process of me sort of like picking up that paper, that folder, that's when the cat kind of latched on. And it was like for a few seconds, just dangling from my thumb. And it took me a minute to be like, this is what's going on right now. The cat finally released. And it was so painful because the teeth were, you know, they went down to the bone. And my joints became septic as a result of that. It was just a terrible injury. And so at the time, I truly didn't know how serious it was going to be. Mm-hmm. The next morning I did, but it was, you know, we are getting bit and scratched in practice all of the time. And I was not wearing the gloves we had because the only thing available to us were welder gloves. You know, they're these bulky, cumbersome gloves you can't restrain properly. And so nobody really ever wore gloves, and we needed gloves in practice. You know, we need them for certain patients. And so that's where I was like, okay, we don't have, what we need is not available to us in practice. And what type of glove do we need? And that's sort of just how it all came about. I had so much time in the hospital. I had a lot of time to think about the product and what we needed. And that's how it started. Yeah.
So before we get to the glove part, what is it about cats and saliva that causes that?
So with pets in general, the bacteria in their mouths, it's dirt, mm-hmm. it's, you know, a dirty environment. And cats in particular, so especially, you know, this particular patient was stray, you know, recently found and adopted, but had no, you know, we didn't know the history, probably never vaccinated before. So the mouth was just like a breeding ground of bacteria, and mm-hmm. cats' mouths in particular can have different strains of bacteria that are, you know, so when they bite, it is it's harder to resolve the infection, you know, and also the shape of the teeth, you know, they're very sharp. And so when they bite, and if it's an aggressive bite, all of that bacteria, it's going straight into wherever, you know, that puncture wound is. And I think that's why it was, so serious. There's the
wow.
It was like the perfect storm of everything. Yeah.
And so that must have been so, well, I don't know, when it happened, it wasn't necessarily as frightening as realizing after the next day, really where you were going. Since you didn't know the background of the cat, did you have to think about rabies or anything too?
Yes. Unfortunately, because the cat did not have previous vaccination history, the really unfortunate part of all of this was that when I went to the hospital, and you know, you report this was a cat bite, it's the law. If the pet is not vaccinated, if the vaccination status is unknown, or if there's any question at all, if it's past due, by law, they do have to test the pet for rabies. And the only way to do that, unfortunately, is, you know, we have to send away the animal, but they test the brain sample. And so this cat, you know, had to be euthanized. It was a safety measure, not just for myself, but also the family that adopted
sure.
this cat. They had been handling this animal for a week at that point. And so,
Wow.
Yeah. So we had to really make sure, you know, this cat was negative, that there's no concern. Mm-hmm. And so, had to go through the rabies testing. I was current on my rabies vaccine. So that gave me some safety, but, with any vaccine, it's not always 100%. So I had to rebooster that. We notified the family, you know, the rabies test came back negative. but the cat, unfortunately, you know, had to do the euthanasia and send off the sample for testing from that.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So in this case, it couldn't, it, you know, not being vaccinated is understandable, but it also goes to speak to the importance of getting your animals vaccinated.
Absolutely. I agree.
Because it's for rabies.
Yeah. Human health concern, also transmission between other species. It's just, it's serious. And we do see, you know, rabies cases. So it was good that this cat was not, you know, positive. And, but it's just unfortunate, you know, the way that we have to test and everything. So it's just so important to keep pets up to date, you know, just make sure that they're protected as well, for sure. Yeah.
So you are in the hospital.
Yep.
And you're a brand. So how many years does it take to become a veterinarian?
It was 4 years after college. So I graduated from undergrad, went to Ohio State. It's a 4-year program. And I graduated from Ohio State in June. And this injury happened the beginning of January. So wow. I had, you know, and that was hard because as a new grad, you need the income. I mean, you've been a student the past 4 years and there's a lot of financial obligations. And so for me, it was really hard to be off work like that. And on top of that, because of the seriousness of the injury, at one point the doctors weren't even sure they'd be able to keep my thumb, you know?
Oh my.
So in my mind, I just thought, how can I practice medicine? You know, I had a day where I did surgery at work and examining animals all the time. And I thought, well, I don't know if my left hand is not usable, how does this affect my career? And so fortunately, you know, surgery went well, you know, it was very painful and the recovery, but my thumb was able to be saved and eventually got over the infections. But it was, yeah, it was pretty scary because there were so many unknowns, I think, at that time. Yeah.
It's interesting when people are presented with such a difficult situation and could be life-changing.
Yes.
Or life-ending.
Right. I agree. Yeah.
And especially when you've worked so hard and your career is your passion.
Right.
And does it make you second guess, what did I get myself into?
At the time it did. Absolutely. I thought, because I think it was such a hard time not knowing if I'd be able to practice again. And I spent all this time in school and all this money, that absolutely I did. And then I think just when, you know, when I was out of surgery and I had that week in the hospital to kind of just, you know, recover and stay on the antibiotics and things like that, I think that's kind of when it was a turning point for me where I was like, okay, like I finally had a chance to sort of process everything up until that point that happened. And then there was like some space for me. There was like space in my mind and my thinking. And I thought, okay, this is what happened. This is where I am now. And what can I do in order to protect myself in the future, but also other veterinarians? So even though I didn't have use of my hand at that time, I had to go through 7 months of physical therapy, I still thought the profession needed something. So really, I wasn't sure that I'd be back in practice, but I thought there's an opportunity for me to do something, you know, and that's what I wanted to do. And so I felt like, even if I couldn't practice again, I felt like this happened for a reason and I'm going to kind of really make the best out of it and try to help the profession. If I can't be as a veterinarian, then I wanted to develop a product for safety.
And so the current situation prior to the armor hand glove is welding gloves. And correct. We talked about this a little bit too. There was a time a really long time ago when my kids were little and a friend of ours needed us to sit his cat and cat was evil. And not only was Raisin evil, she was black.
Right.
And not only was she just really not that nice, and we already had a cat and she wasn't thrilled with that, she came with medicine.
Right.
Right. So it was the whole thing. And so it is the welding gloves, the thick gloves, and it is really hard to be gentle.
I agree. It's almost impossible. And I feel like that's why we would never choose to wear them.
Sure.
If I put on the welder gloves, and tried to restrain compassionately or even properly, the cat would just slip through. You know, they'd hide mm-hmm. underneath the exam room chair. It would increase the stress for the patient, for the
And so how owner. Uncomfortable it is for them.
Absolutely.
Too, because yeah. that's not soft and comforting either.
Right. It's a lot of force you have to use. And you mm-hmm. can't, you know, the dexterity is not there. And so, you know, and on top of that, these water gloves, they're leather gloves. And so you mm-hmm. cannot, you would use them on thousands of patients and not be able to clean them. And mm-hmm. so it presents a disease transmission risk and everything like that. So it really was, I'm just like, we really need animal handling gloves, like gloves that can be disinfected, washed, have good dexterity. They're flexible. These gloves, in veterinary medicine, there's different kind of ways to practice. And right now there's a huge, you know, movement of like low stress handling. You really want to make this a positive experience for the patient. And Armor Hand it's a certified, like fear-free, low stress product where you can do these safe but compassionate handling techniques. And that was really so important to me because I don't want pets getting manhandled and rough and, you know, things like, I really want them to have a good experience, but we also, as caregivers, we have to be proactive about, you know, protecting ourselves and our health as well. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so what is the glove made of?
So it's all vegan materials. There's synthetic leather. Mm-hmm. Stretch Cordura is the strongest of the stretch materials on the planet. It's actually used in like the lining of tires, which is really unusual. And there's other like just synthetic materials that are flexible, but they're very protective. And so it's a really unique combination of materials. For each production run, we have to special order the materials. So in the factory, it's not like leftover materials from mass production of other gloves. Mm-hmm. These are really unique materials. They're reinforced in the highest injury areas on the hand. Most commonly bit, and just really flexible. They're sized so that, you know, the glove is really supposed to fit perfectly and function perfectly. And so there's a range of sizes and machine washable. I mean, I really tried to think of everything so that people would, you know, grab the gloves, put them on, protect themselves, make it as easy as possible.
And so obviously this can be used in a veterinary setting, but this can also be used at home. But
yes.
What I think is just amazing, and did you envision that this would really happen, how it can be used in wildlife rescue? And tell us all about that too.
Thanks. So when I developed the glove, I thought, you know, just veterinarians. I thought vet techs, veterinarians. And it's been really, really cool because there are, you know, major wildlife organizations in the US that use the gloves all of the time. And I didn't see that coming, but with the protection and the flexibility, they're able to do what they need to do. So a ton of wildlife rescues, groomers, animal shelters, humane animal control. So really any animal caregiver or handler has been benefiting from the gloves. I've sold to zoos. So it's been really interesting to see the feedback, how, you know, everybody's using the product and they're protecting themselves and they're able to get the job done, but also treat animals compassionately and humanely. And I love that. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Yeah. And I think it's amazing how one situation can just create with imagination and applying what this just doesn't make sense. I don't think that we as a society don't often say, gee, this doesn't make sense. I should do something.
Right. Sure. Yeah. I get that. So, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I, you know, even in vet school, it's like you go through all the different rotations and the gloves are always there, but they're always these welder gloves and nobody's going for those. And so I think my injury was just the start where I'm like, we just need to do something different. Yeah.
It's fantastic. And so now what does veterinary look like for you?
So right now, my main job is growing the business, you know, selling mm-hmm. the gloves. I do have sales all over the world at this point. So, but it's still a small business. I still really want to expand and get the word out there. So that is kind of my main job. And then I am still doing vet work. I do it as a relief basis. So when there's a need in the mm-hmm. clinic, I'm there. You know, I have two boys, so they're of course my top priority, but running the business, maintaining the boys, and still being in the vet practice, it's like a very good combination for me. Yeah, so I've been enjoying that. Yeah.
And so now, how did you, through the difficulty or the creating of this product, right, and your healing, and now managing two businesses and your family, so that's really three.
Right.
How do you take care of yourself? What do you do? What makes you whole?
Sure. So what I learned early on with my vet career is when I did not take care of myself, it really led to a lot of burnout. You know, I felt exhausted every day. And so over the past years, I've really made it a priority to, you know, self-care is so important. And it's not just like showering every day. It's like doing extra for yourself to really make your health and wellness a priority. So being outside is key for me. I feel like, you know, I have two dogs, so I'm either every day I'm trying to either walk them, I'm trying to go on hikes. I'm even if it's an hour, 45 minutes, I'm really trying to get outside. Whether there's snow, you know, in Pennsylvania or it's hot, I just bundle up whatever I need to do. But I just feel like being in nature and having that time to decompress and just having that space for myself is so important. Mm-hmm. I think it makes me, you know, a better mom, a better veterinarian, better, you know, business owner. And so I do make that a priority. I feel like I've seen how I feel when I don't have that. And I know it's the healthiest thing for me and my family as well to make that time for sure. Yeah.
And we're going to expand. We're actually going to put this conversation into two sections, and we're going to talk about the pressures of being a veterinarian and what that's really like and how important the self-care is. But I just want to touch on it quickly here too, because we use the term self-care is used too much.
Yeah.
And it seems very bland to me anyways. And everybody should have self-care. Well, yeah, it's very true. However, it's deeper than that.
Yes, I agree.
And it is that self, it is the need to make sure that we are balanced internally,
yes,
as well as externally.
Absolutely.
And the pressures of people's careers really can weigh on everybody. And the pressure of a veterinary, so a lot of maybe people think, well, I'm going to be a vet. That's great because I love animals. That's fantastic. But there's another side of it too, that you really have to take care of yourself, right?
Absolutely. I almost think, and I could not agree with you more. I think that self-care, right, it's such a term everybody hears, but it's, for me, I think it's almost like some type of soul connection. It's really connecting with yourself in ways that go beyond like, I mean, it's important to enjoy the cup of tea or this and that, but I think it's really just having that space and slowing down and honoring yourself and knowing that you deserve this time and whatever it is. And I think it can come in many different ways for everybody. But with a veteran, being a veterinarian, you know, I think we're very compassionate. We're very empathetic. We're giving. And I notice in the profession that we have these one, and they're wonderful personality traits, and we're hardworking. We want to save every animal, you know, we see, but there's a very sad and unfortunate side to veterinary medicine. Mm. And there's this terrible epidemic where, you know, veterinarians are taking their lives all of the time. Almost every time I'm online, I'm reading of another vet that's taken their life. And I think that, you know, we give and we give and we give. And I think it's so unbalanced where that self-care and saying like, I'm burned out, I need a break, or I need to do this for myself, or I think we have trouble verbalizing what we need. And I think that, you know, we really make work the priority. We come home and we can't get work off our minds, and it's consuming, you know, our lives. And I think that that really can lead to a downward spiral in the profession. And I don't have all the answers, but I think there absolutely has to be a better balance for us, for sure. Yeah.
And we're going to expand on that in our second show. But it is very true. And there are many other careers that are out there that are as taxing or as giving and as compassionate. And it's a great example of how can we get the message out and let people know that it's okay to say, I need help, or I need a break, or I need something for me.
Absolutely. I agree. And it's such an important message. I feel like it's just not out there, though. I think even with therapy, you know, if somebody has a broken arm, they would have no problem saying, you know, I have to go to the doctor for this. And I think mental health, emotional health, you know, therapy, it's the same way. You know, I've been in therapy for years, and I consider it just something so routine and commonplace for me. And, you know, I want my mental health to be as strong as my physical health. And so I think just having these conversations and just making it more normalized is so important, for sure.
So we'll get into that a little bit more. I'm looking forward to diving into that. And just switching gears a little bit, going back to the glove in your business. And so wildlife rescue, right? And Humane Society Rescue. Where else? Tell us where else people are using the glove, and worldwide.
Sure. Yep. Pet owners to medicate, pill their pets at home. A lot of times, you know, we recommend, you know, medicated baths or whatever. You know, it increases compliance with pet owners when they're protected, especially for the owners who are elderly, immunocompromised, you know, pregnant. It's absolutely a health concern, you know, to get an injury when your immune system is decompressed. And then, you know, groomers, animal shelters, zoo employees, vet schools have been starting, you know, safety talks, which I love. I think it should start there, you know, for veterinarians. Just any animal handler, any animal caregiver, pet sitters, they've been purchasing as well. So it's been really cool to see people that find value in the product and they want to, you know, protect themselves. So
that's fantastic. And so where can people find the product?
So online, the website is armorhandglove.com, and they can order there right now. We're really low on inventory, but we are getting more this summer. So we have a notify me form. If we don't have the size you need, just fill out the notify me form and we'll definitely be in touch.
Great. Laura, thank you. And if people would like to hear more, we're going to be coming back with a deeper dive on the pressures and the wonderful pieces that come with veterinary care too. So Laura, thanks so much for having the conversation with me.
Thank you so much for listening today. Today's show is sponsored by Seaside Solutions, my financial services company. As a business owner, it's easy to be pulled in many different directions, and often taking care of yourself plummets to the bottom of the list. For me, I find myself outside to reground. My time outdoors helps me manage my day more effectively and be more present for my clients. Through this, Discover Rising Tides was born. At Seaside Solutions, we truly believe that education is the foundation of financial wellness. Our primary focus is to provide guidance that is designed to help you achieve your long-term financial goals and visions. Working with a plan allows space for doing more things that you love, like being outside to make the inside better. If I can help you create or realign your plan, or if you would like to be added to my weekly newsletter, please let me know. This week's topic was 5 ways to set more achievable goals. Your referral means the big, beautiful world to me. And if I can help, please let me know. And thank you so much for listening, and see you next time.